First, can I just highlight the commemoration or the celebration of World Press Freedom Day last week, and just praise the efforts of the many journalists that operate here in South Sudan and beyond for their work in covering the issues that we're confronting. It often takes quite a bit of courage to do that, and I know that people do face some risk. We have, for example, George Levio, a former employee of Radio Mariah, who's been in detention for 3 years now. But I just wanted to highlight that, acknowledge your good work and the very, very important work that you do in getting the news to people around the country and around the world. Since I was spoke to you last, which is more than 4 weeks ago now, I'm sad to say, just on the security situation, that the security situation has meant there has been an increase in the amount of fighting throughout the country, largely an increase in the area of Upper Nile and in Jonglei. In response to the fighting in Upper Nile, in particular the fighting around Wael Shaluk and Kadok, there's been a large movement of people to the small village of Abarok in Upper Nile. We estimate that around 30 to 35, perhaps 40,000 people are there at the moment. And we were concerned last week about their situation. As a result of that, and particularly the lack of water, good clean water for the people there, and as a result of that, we have positioned and flown in a peacekeeping force into the area. And that peacekeeping force will be there temporarily to provide some support for humanitarian workers to be able to move in as well. And in particular, for the ability of water trucks and water to be able to be brought into the area to help and assist those people who are there. We are worried that without that assistance, there could be an outbreak of diarrhea and possibly cholera. We've had one case of cholera already. And so the situation for us is the peacekeepers are there very much to support the humanitarian efforts to bring short-term relief to the people there until the rainy season comes, which I think will be in the next... We're looking at about 4 weeks in total presence in the village of Abarok. Secondly, we are concerned about the security, the deteriorating security situation in the Pibor area between Dinkabor youth and Merle youth. We've been engaging with communities there over the past few weeks. And as we speak, we are supporting peace efforts by the government and the First Vice President to talk to both communities and providing, put at the disposal of those people, helicopter assistance to be able to move between the two communities and decrease tensions in the area. We're worried that that might spark a more widespread fighting between those two communities. We're anxious that does not happen, and hence the reason we are providing some support to the peace efforts on the ground. Just south of that area, I just wanted to acknowledge and express my very deep condolences to those people, the families of the 40 people who were killed on the Bor-Juba Road. This is the second attack in that area in the past few weeks. UNMISS has been supporting the medical facilities in Bor with X-ray facilities, and we've also transported the bodies of the Ugandans who were killed there back down to Juba, along with one or two people who were wounded and their transport down to hospital facilities down here in Juba. But the deterioration of the security on that road is of concern to us, and particularly the large number of people who are being killed.
Just on the on that issue, I just want to mention that in Leah, in the former Unity state, we had last week an attack on our compound there, where there are Ghanaian peacekeepers. We have, from what we understand, there was shooting at our base for a period of about 1 hour. And last Thursday night, we have an investigation team in Lear at the moment looking at who and what was the reasons behind the attack. They have not yet completed their investigation. We are not making any comment about who or what might have been responsible for that. When that investigation concludes, we may have a better idea. But in general, I just wanted to say that UNMISS is here to support and assist people right across the country. And Leah, as you know, is an area which has been declared a famine area. The reason we have peacekeepers there is to provide some support and encouragement for humanitarian activities to continue, and particularly the introduction of food into that area. As a result of this attack, I know that the numbers of humanitarian workers in the area has gone down, has declined, and that will have an impact on the amount of humanitarian assistance we can that can be provided to the area. So I just wanted to say that the attacks has a direct consequence on the humanitarian activities and the humanitarian assistance that can be provided to people who desperately need it. It is an extraordinarily selfish thing to do in the circumstances when we're looking at the particularly the women and children who need it. I just wanted to point out that although the attack was an hour long, the Ghanaian peacekeepers, in the true spirit of peacekeeping, retaliated, defending not only themselves and the humanitarians that were working with them, but also the 1,300 internally displaced people which have sought shelter alongside our peacekeeping base. So I was very pleased, and I personally thanked the Ghanaian forces for their support. Lastly, I just wanted to talk about the humanitarian situation, and in particular thank and acknowledge the courageous work that many humanitarians are doing, both national South Sudanese partners and international partners, both NGOs and UN. Without those people working and doing the job that they do, hundreds of thousands of people in South Sudan would not be alive today. And I think we owe them a real debt of gratitude. They are able to access overwhelmingly all of the country, but there are obviously, we have ongoing issues in some places with trying to get to some communities. We're continuing negotiations with both the government and opposition forces to make sure that we are able to access communities, and that will be ongoing. We won't be letting up on that. We are working very closely with the humanitarian community to make sure that we can provide whatever support and security they need in order to be able to provide assistance.
My question is regarding Abu Roach. There was concern expressed by the UN, the UN humanitarian coordinator, concerning the presence of Aguelek forces near the IDPs in Abu Roach. What have you done to improve the security situation, and how are the humanitarian efforts going on?
We, the head of the our field office for UNMISS, yesterday went to Abu Roach and spoke with the governor and the and other officials. She requested that any armed elements move out of the area. We are there to only assist and support the civilian community, particularly women and children who are vulnerable to those issues that I talked about, diarrhea and cholera, if the situation gets out of hand. So that was our request, and we'll be following up with that. On the second part of your questions around the humanitarian response, my understanding is around about 50 humanitarian workers are there in the region right now in the area. They're starting to step up their provision of health services, and the World Food Programme will undertake a food drop into the area over the next 1 or 2 days. The humanitarians on the ground will assist in ensuring that food drop is distributed to the right people, and it goes to the people who need it. So we're reasonably pleased. We're satisfied with the arrangements on the ground at the moment, but it's an ongoing initiative.
You did mention about continuing fighting in some parts of South Sudan. Would be interested to know which parts exactly, if you can try to elaborate and mention some of these parts. Maybe the second question is, with this increase in fightings, I mean recently, as you did say, where do you see South Sudan in peacemaking process? Are you concerned with these spikes of fighting?
Yes, we are concerned about the increase in fighting. What we are hoping is that with the onset of the rainy season in the coming weeks, that might slow the fighting down and give a greater impetus and a greater focus on peace efforts. Certainly, I know that the region today, there'll be some discussions, side discussions that'll be happening with regional leaders in London as part of the Somalia conference that's going on in London. We are engaging as much as we can with all actors to try and bring about a settlement. We were encouraged a few weeks ago when President Kiir announced a ceasefire. Unfortunately, on that on the ground has not materialised. We hope that will be able to be put into place in the coming weeks. We have consistently called for a stop to the fighting, to the conflict. We do not believe that is the way forward for South Sudan. It's going to ultimately depend on a political settlement. Yeah, it's particularly in Upper Nile, as I said, in around Kodok and towards Kaka, there's been concerns around and ongoing fighting around the town of Wat. And then obviously what I was talking about was the tensions and the skirmishes that have been happening between Boy Dinka youth and Mulay youth in Jongle as well. Those are the two most particular areas that we're worried about, and what we would want to do is to, as soon as possible, move back to the peace agreement. That will depend, as I said, on a ceasefire. We do need a ceasefire in order to be able to get a political settlement underway, rather than in a sense the continuation of military activities. Military activities ultimately will not bring about a peaceful resolution to South Sudan's problems. We do need to have reconciliation and a peace settlement.
I'm Dennis Elamu from Xinhua News Agency. You talked about the fighting between the Dinka Bor youth and the Murule. I would like to know, you said the situation is deteriorating. I mean, can you give more details? And then also, I would also like to ask you, any new developments so far on the protection force?
As I'm sure everybody in this room knows, and the tensions between Bor Dinka youth and the Mulay youth have been ongoing, and this is not a new thing that's happened recently. But recently what we're worried about is the escalation and the mobilisation of youth from both sides. From what we can understand, they are heavily armed, and therefore as a result of that, any clashes could result in a large number of casualties.
I think it's really important that we try now, before there has been skirmishes, there has been some cattle raiding, I understand from both sides, also some the abduction of children, certainly from the Dinka side, but also I'm hearing from the Mulay side that Dinka have reciprocated. We are at a point of high tension between the two sides, and what our goal is, one, to try and de-escalate that tension in the short term, and then two, once it's de-escalated, be able to move to a peace conference or some sort of peace meeting where we can try and resolve the underlying issues. So that's the strategy. As I said, at the moment, the first Vice President Thaban Dingh is in Bor. He has said to us that he would like to go to Pibor to talk to both sides. If he does that and he would like and he needs transport across, then the UN said that they, and I said that we would provide helicopter support for him to go to both sides of the conflict. At the moment, the two sides are sort of situated on that Bor Pibor road around Manyabol, is around about that area where they're standing off. But the important thing is that we de-escalate the tensions and provide an opportunity to talk rather than to fight, because fighting will only result in a greater cycle of revenge and an ongoing conflict. It will be of no benefit to either group. So that's why we are engaged as we are. The RPF is slowly, and I reiterate the word slowly, taking up its position here. We've got the advanced party of the Bangladesh Engineering Group, which will be welcome. I just want to perhaps just say about the engineering group on the ground, is since I spoke to you last, some of you will know that the Japanese company that is here in Juba is withdrawing after 5 years of extremely good service. I think this is the longest the Japanese have ever been in a peacekeeping mission in an engineering capacity. They are leaving their equipment here, and we are now looking for another country to take over that equipment and continue the Japanese good work. The Japanese, we have Koreans in Bor, we have Indians, and as you know, the British up in Malakal and Bientu, Chinese in Wau and on that road to Wau, and the Bangladeshis coming in as well. The whole point about this is to improve the road system so that we can ensure that supplies can get from the south up to the north, and that trade can continue. Often I don't think, because it's not seen, just how much work is being done. And on that 1,000 kilometre stretch of road between Juba and Bentiu in the north that goes via Wau, of the 1,000 kilometres, more than 700 kilometres has been renovated by the engineering groups that are there on the ground. Just coming back to your RPF question, so, and then the Rwandans are coming in, their advance party will come in the next month or so, and the Nepalese group we hope will be coming in the next month or so as well, the advance party for them. So while it's slow, it's progressing.
Clarification. This 30 to 35,000 people recently displaced, may I understand, is it this month, 2 months ago, a month ago? Maybe my one last question is, the fighting along Juba Bor Road, we did understand there are people displaced. Any idea, how many people have been displaced and maybe their conditions even? Thank you.
The numbers that I was speaking about on around 35,000 plus were in Abarok, up in the Upper Nile. These are people who left Wau Shaluk and Kadok and have been moving largely by foot to Abarok for what they believe would be a safer place to be in Abarok. We don't have an exact number on them, because they're doing the registration at the moment, but it's estimated to be around 35,000. And as I said, the most pressing issue for us is clean water. If 35,000 living temporarily do not have clean water and an outbreak of cholera or diarrhea occurs, it can cut through a group of people like that very, very quickly and put a number of people at risk. In regard to your second question about the displacement along the Boer Juba Road, I don't have an estimation of numbers there yet. We'll have to get clarification on that and come back to you in the future.
Chan with Asai Shimbun. My question is regarding the killing on Boer Juba Road. Can you tell us if the UN has a team to investigate who did the killing and what is the motive?
When the first deaths occurred with the NGO, humanitarian organisation, when seven were killed, including I think three Kenyans, that happened about a little over four weeks ago. We sent a team up there to investigate. We also called on the government to carry out an investigation as well. We don't have yet any confirmation about who was responsible. On this more recent attack, where 40 died and 17 were injured, again, we don't have absolute confirmation about who was responsible yet. I mean, that's possibly a question you might want to ask the government. We're not carrying out an investigation ourselves into that incident. Certainly not a formal investigation anyway.
I would like also to ask about humanitarian access to those in need. Are you still facing probably some blockage, or it has improved compared to the previous situation in terms of accessing humanitarian assistance?
That's a good question. I think the main point about the humanitarian activities that are going on across the country is that we are able to reach the great majority of people in this country. That's an important point to make. As I said before, I very much acknowledge the courageous efforts of the humanitarian workers, both South Sudanese and international people who are on the ground doing that work, because they're doing, without them, there's no doubt that thousands of people would not be alive today. So let's just establish that. In terms of access, there are issues that crop up, and we pursue those with the government, mainly the government, because obviously they control most of the areas in South Sudan, but also with the opposition groups as well. There are ongoing issues around that. The great majority of them, I have to say, are issues which happen at a local level, and that impedes our movement. Many times we are able to resolve those issues either on the ground there, or where we need to, we refer them back to Juba here, and sometimes we get the situation resolved by intervention of the, particularly the SPLA in Juba. So, look, it's just an ongoing issue. I'm not sure if it's got any better or worse, but the most important thing is that we are getting to the great majority of people who need support and need assistance. That's the key thing.
Maura Jack from Catholic Radio Network. This week, the Catholic Bishop in Yei, he have been talking about the WFP and UN being misinformed about shortage of food in Yei, and some people there in Yei taking advantage of people not around their field and stealing their food and selling it in the market. Do you have any idea about that?
I can't comment on that particular issue because I'm not aware of it. We do have we are sending now an UNMISS patrol to Yei on a very regular basis. So probably 3 weeks in every four, we will have an UNMISS presence there. And the idea is to try and provide greater confidence in and around Yei town. But the area is very tense, and we're concerned about human rights violations, particularly attacks on women in and around Yei town. But as to the specific incident of this that you're talking about, I don't have details.
We have a question on what are the contingency from Britain coming to do in South Sudan, the troops from Britain? And then the second one is, you are talking of regional protection force, but there are some contingency which are coming from Middle East. Can you try to clarify that?
So, on the British forces first, the British forces are one contingent of UNMISS, so they come under command of our force commander and under myself as well. They are here with the prime objective of building a level 2 hospital here in Benchu. I was up in Benchu on Monday. They are progressing quickly with that, so it's mainly an engineering company with some support. But I'm hoping they'll also be able to help us a bit with the road network and trying to develop some of the roading issues. So it's an engineering force that the British have brought in here, and they fall under and are part of UNMISS. Secondly, on the RPF, the main battalions that are coming in with the RPF, the Regional Protection Force, Rwandan, Ethiopian and Kenyan. However, there were some components of the RPF that the countries were not able to provide, and that included the Nepalese and in particular the Bangladeshi engineering contingent. So they're coming from outside. The main force, if you like, are coming from the region. They are part of UNMISS when they arrive. Although they are a separate entity within UNMISS, the Regional Protection Force, and they are here to try and provide confidence for people inside of Juba, to help people from who perhaps have left Juba to come back to Juba and work with the authorities to provide a safe and stable environment around the Juba area. But they are very much part of UNMISS, but they do have parts of that contingent which come from not from the region, simply because the region at the time was unable to provide those specialist areas. Thank you. Can I just reiterate what I said at the very beginning? Thank you for your work and the work that you do. The media is an extremely important part of any democracy and any society, and I know there are difficulties for you, but I just want to acknowledge and pledge our support for the work that you do. Thank you.